Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Tuesday, May 2nd edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Conan and Dennis Dick on this show today. We have the earnings parade continuing this morning. Let's just run through the list real quick. AMD, CVS, Merck, Pfizer, Shop, Alum Liquidators, MA, Aetna, Coach. Just a few of the big names being discussed this morning in earnings land. We also have some M&A news to parse through as well, and some morning movers that are sort of outside the realm of earnings and ratings land, as is the norm. Our guest today will be Nick Shaheen, joining us at 8:35. He's our regular on Tuesday. He's the author of Create Income with Option Spreads on MarketFi. Joel, how's the market doing today?
The market is sleepy, Spencer. Down 0.75 at 86.25. Just a 4-point range overnight. Major consolidation. We're going to talk to Nick Shaheen, and he is going to give us a foolproof strategy to trade this consolidation. You have crude trading up 31 cents at $49.15. Still can't get back over that $50 level. Trading at yesterday's high up at $49.32. Gold down a buck, took out that $12.60 level. We're at $12.54.5. That's down a stick. Silver up 7 cents at $16.91. Dennis, how you doing on this Tuesday morning?
Not too bad. Just kicking around here, watching the S&P futures flat here once again.
You're not watching the S&P futures. You were too pay for quotes.
Yeah, I'm watching SPY.
Okay.
I'm watching SPY trade flat.
So what do you make of this consolidation here? Really? I mean, we had the gap and go. You made the call. We're going up to test 2,400. And
we
now,
haven't got there yet, though.
So are you getting, what do you think? Three lows in a row right at 2378. Three highs in a row at the 2390 area. Dennis, do you want out of the bet?
No, I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking on the bull train here just because why not? It's worked for 7 years. I don't want to be the person to call the top on this market here, so I'll keep going with the momentum and going with the bullish theme here until proven not right, I guess, with the bullish theme. So it's worked here for a long time, and as a momentum market like we were talking about yesterday, I'm going to continue to go with the flow.
Sticking with your rules. All right. Well, we got a big loser here. AMD,
yep.
And 2
yep.
million shares. The street is making a statement here on AMD.
Yeah, AMD getting hit hard. Spencer, give us the details.
Yep, so Q1 adjusted EPS was a 4-cent loss. That's in line with the estimate. Sales of $984 million versus $984.4 million. So pretty much in line numbers as far as Q1. They do see Q2 sales growth quarter over quarter at 14 to 20%. But despite all that revenue growth, shares did sink after the report.
Yeah, getting hit here hard. So it kind of bounced around a little bit there. It got hit, and it had a little bit of chopped back up a little bit, but then just slow leak and leak and leak and leak. And now we are trading down over 11% on AMD here this morning. We're off the lows. Low is way down $11.70, so that's the good news. But again, the bad news is we are significantly down 11%. That is one of your big losers here this morning.
And you know who made a great call on this stock?
Who's that?
Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, where did they downgrade it at? Do we know what day that was? Do we have the day?
Actually,
we can look at the price.
Yeah, I can show you right now. Maybe Spencer, we had Wayne Duggan do an article on it. Traders mining the Goldman gap here, and it's very apparent here on the daily charts, right? This was the day right here. We were trading over $14. They gave it the downgrade. It went under 13, and then look, it battled back to get in that gap. Fill that gap area three days in a row. And
yeah.
Now, as you would say, Dennis, kaplooey. I don't know. I'm keeping a pre-market low, keeping an eye on that at 11.70, back up into 12 handle. Maybe there is more downside in an issue. I just don't know if you're going to see a lot of it today. I keep an eye on that pre-market low of 11.70. We haven't traded under $12 here in this high-flying issue since, wow, we blew through that 11 handle, Dennis, back at the beginning of the year. I do see one load, 1195.
There's not much in here. That's the only problem. So that's one thing I'll say, you know, and stocks can go anywhere, but we always say when there's not a lot, when it hasn't traded in an area for, you know, a long period of time and it had the big gap up, we're looking at the green candle back from February the 1st when the stock went from 1090 up to 1214. We always say what goes up through an area easy can come down through an area easy. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to do it. It's just not a lot of support down there until you probably get back down to that 11 bucks. So 1170 is probably a good bogey. That's your pre-market low. We start taking that out, you start thinking about 11. But this thing's ugly here already. Although I'm, you know, after the U.S. steel debacle, you know, just talking and looking, obviously I didn't really trade it. But, I mean, if you were trying to call the bottom of that, 28, 27, 26, 25, 24, 23, you're still trying to call the bottom. U.S. Steel made another new low yesterday on the move at 21.46. So, you know, when the ball turns and momentum starts going the other way, it can stay that way for a long period of time. And sometimes it takes, you know, an analyst upgrade or some vote of confidence or something, you know, to kickstart it here. But this thing is trading major volume here. I don't see this thing bouncing back anytime soon. 3.2 million shares have already traded this morning, Joel. That's just this morning's volume without last night's volume. So, major volume down here, disaster of the day.
And you are going all in. I just got the margin call from Bright Trading. You are going all in on NVIDIA. You are
on NVIDIA?
Yeah. What about it, Dennis? Come on.
You know what? Okay, so here's the thought process. And normally, in normal markets, you'd say, okay, well, NVIDIA is going to get the beats here too because AMD's down 11%. You know, NVIDIA's only down 1% right now. There is, you know, a pretty good statistical arbitrage opportunity here. I'll tell you, it has not been working. We say it, you know, we've said it on the show for the last month, this entire earnings season. Sympathy has not been working. And if we look, you know, Seagate, Western Digital was a great example. Seagate got absolutely murdered. By the end of the day, Western Digital opened down but ended up closing up, had a good earnings report, went the other way. We saw the same thing with Mattel and Hasbro. We saw the same thing happen with the steel stocks. U.S. Steel was way down that day. You saw NUEX or AKS and STLD all open down, all closed green that day. So if we're following the theme that has been dictated in this earnings season, that would mean NVIDIA could actually close green today. And I'm going with it. I think that NVIDIA closes green.
Is it this lunch kind of thing?
I'm not making a bet, though.
You're not making a bet. Okay.
I'm not making a bet because, you know, that goes directly against all stat herb strategies and the long-term strategies. But it's been working. I mean, that's what's been working is actually buying the pullback in the sympathy play and just letting it come back up. And NVIDIA reports next week. And if it follows the theme and closes green, then you think maybe NVIDIA actually beats.
trying to fill a gap from twice this thing got knocked down by analysts, both when they were at the 110 area. Now it's just kind of creeping up. I'd love to see it up at 110 ahead of earnings.
But it's good. Like, you're just looking at NVIDIA here. It's holding on well, so it is holding to the theme here. Because if you would say, you know, in normal markets that AMD is going to be down 11%, I would think NVIDIA would be down more than a buck. So I think you got a battle here. You probably got a battle between the Paris traders who are probably selling it short, saying that's going to close, and then traders who are looking at what I've been looking at, that sympathy has been working, saying, you know what? This might just be, you know, the same thing that's happened with Mattel and Hasbro, and the same thing that's happened with the steel stocks, and the same thing that happened with Seagate and Western Digital, and they're, you know, buying it here. So big battle here this morning, NVIDIA. It hasn't really done much, just kind of hanging out here in the 105 handle. So that's why I say you're at the battle zone here right now. Let's see where it opens. If buyers start coming off the open, then I'm going to say, you know, maybe this could close green. I already said it. I think it can close green.
All right, if we have any NUE traders, I just want to mention a daily level here of really significance, just over $62. You've had four lows right in the lower 62 handle with an exact double top at 62.31. And then this just reminds me of a formation that you talked about yesterday, Dennis, and I don't know if you got a piece of it, but look at this Nordstrom chart. You remember you were talking about that resistance and a potential breakout?
Yeah.
Well, if you had been using it as a short first, buddy, you would have been in the green there. We got a triple top in JW Nordstrom.
Whatever broke out.
Never broke out.
And that's the one thing is, you know, anticipating a breakout's a very dangerous game. You know, if I'm trading breakouts, wait for it to break out. And then usually I like to look the if it pulls back to test, you know, where it broke out from, that's when I strike. And then obviously if it closes below there, then the breakout's a fake out. So, you know, guilty until proven innocent on breakouts, and that's the case. And if you were taking a cue from the other retailers, we were saying Kohl's chart did not look good. Macy's chart did not look good. Kohl's really broke down there yesterday. Had a pretty awful day falling a buck there on the day. So Kohl's is looking awful. Some of these retail stocks are not looking good here again.
All right. Some pharma earnings today.
Pharma earnings? Which ones? Where are you going?
Did we
pharma?
Get Merck?
You got me fooled.
We got Pfizer. We got Merck.
Oh, pharma. I thought you said farmer. And I was like, what crops? You know, what are we talking about? Farmer stocks. Pharmaceutical stocks. We do have two of them, Pfizer and Merck. Spencer, give us the details.
Well, let's go with Pfizer first. Q1 EPS, 69 cents. That beat by 2 cents. Sales of 12.78 billion versus 13.09 billion. So they missed the sales number a little bit. They did reaffirm their guidance for the fiscal year. However, as far as EPS and sales goes, those numbers are still coming in in line with estimates for both. That was Pfizer, and then I'll do Merck after you guys take a look at the chart.
I'll do Merck, and then we'll tackle them both together.
Okay.
Here's the Merck numbers.
Merck reported for the quarter Q1 EPS 88 cents, that beat by 5 cents, sales of 9.43 versus 9.25 billion. So they beat on the top and they beat on the bottom. They are raising their guidance for the fiscal year, however. So, good raise
One
there.
One thing I've always noted in is that pharmaceutical stocks sometimes move a bit on their earnings, but it's never usually see major moves off the earnings reports. They're more interested in drug news. You know, that's what can really move pharmaceutical stocks there. So not surprising that muted activity in both of these stocks here this morning. Pfizer is trading off the lows a little bit. Merck got a huge pop. I don't know what people were doing. A light volume, though, but it got up over the 63 handle. Wish I would have been awake to try that on the short side. But in any regard here, actually, I own both of these in my investment portfolio, so I got to disclose that, too.
All right, a big old pop well into the 63 handle, 63.71. This is for Merck. That was short-lived, and now you're back down here near the low of the moves, folks. Well, not quite. You did get under $61. I'm keeping an eye on yesterday's low here because it was buffeted by Friday's low as well. So 20 cents away, holding $62 are critical here for Merck, and the close is right in that area. Pfizer been trading the range. I don't know if you're going to get another shot here in the upper 33 handle or $34, but you had a seller lurking around there for the, let's see, one, two, three, four, for five out of the last six sessions. Couple lows down at 33.5. So below 33.5, I see some real estate down to under $33.
Dr. J wants to know about the Coach earnings, COH. Getting a nice pop here in the pre-market. We know some of the laggards have been getting bought. I could call this a laggard, at least for the last month. They were leaning on the wrong side yesterday anyways because they hit it right ahead of this report. Now we're popping back 7% on these numbers.
Up 46 cents versus 44 cents, $995 million in sales versus $1.02 billion projection. So they missed on the sales number, and they are maintaining their fiscal year sales guidance.
Stock 41. 45 here now, Joel. This is challenging the highs from March.
Yeah, right there, right now. That's your pre-market high. I'll be keeping an eye on the 4170, 4156. That was a double top there. I'll have to respect that as resistance here since you had a big sell-off. A lot of people scratching their head after they got caught being long over 40 on the breakout. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not even going to be convinced until this one gets over 42 that it's just going to be like a 3, 4, 5 point up day.
CVS also reporting earnings, stock getting a lift in the pre-market. Spencer, how's the CVS numbers?
CVS Q1 EPS $1.17 versus $1.10. Nice number there. Sales 44.5 versus $44.2 billion. So good number there as well. They are also reaffirming their guidance for the fiscal year. Sees Q2 EPS at $1.29 to $1.33. That is on the low end. The estimate was $1.33.
What do you think of this one? This one's had a pretty good run-up. It got the extra pop there, you know, because the people are speculating that Anthem might, they might get the Anthem contract that Express Scripts had before. It's still hanging out up here. It's near the highs where it was back in January. Joel, What are you thinking?
Just a big move here in April.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, double
big
bat.
Move.
Yeah. To me, I mean, maybe a better place to take off a line than initiate a short. But we've just moved up from the middle 76 handle. You had 3-4 lows right at 76.60. Now right back up at $83. Let's see what your pre-market high. Pre-market high is 83.45. I mean, man, the stock take a lot to move that intraday that much. I just see if you can get some follow through. It's one of these situations where see what happens on the pre-market high, see if you exceed that, and then you got one other number to worry about up there, and that's just above 84 or at 84. You had a high at 83.86. So for me, a little too much too fast here for CVS on a contract that they may or may not get.
Well, this is earnings, but yeah, they're still speculating. I think if it gets announced that Express Scripts keeps that contract or if somebody else gets it, I think CVS gets hit. So that's the wild card there. I guess if they get the contract officially, it'll probably get a pop, but it already had a little bit of a pop as people were speculating that. So there is that risk, you know, that that contract goes somewhere else. MO, let's look at this one. Altria Group is getting hit here in the pre-market. Normally a defensive stock, not today. Got hit yesterday. They were leaning the right way because really getting hit here this morning.
Yep, Q1 adjusted EPS of 73 cents versus a 74 cent estimate. Sales of $5.458 billion. That is, and sales net of taxes was a little under $4 billion. So they did reaffirm their EPS outlook for the fiscal year. They see $3.26 to $3.32. That's right in line with the estimate.
I mean, you got a 3.5% dividend on this thing. It's going to be higher here as the stock continues to, if the stock continues to fall. I think value investors get interested sometime. Reason I don't have this one in my investment portfolio and some of these other value stocks, you know, is the multiple's still pretty high. I mean, what is the earnings guidance you just said for the year?
The guidance. Answer just quickly. Yeah, the guidance for. I just lost it. Hold on a second. Let me pull it up.
It's all right. It was three something.
Yeah, it was $3.26 to $3.32 for the EPS.
All right, give them the high end, 3.32. This thing's trading with a multiple of over 20. It's not a growth stock. That's why, you know, I like, you know, a market multiple's trading at 19.20. This is not a growth stock. That's why, you know, from a value perspective, it's still too expensive for me. It had a ridiculous run up in 27 or earlier this year, went from 68 to 76. Now it's given that back. But even before that, you know, we got back in October, we were in the low 60s. So I don't know. It's still not that cheap as a value stock.
How many lunches and steak dinners do I owe you?
You want to make me a bet on this one?
Yeah.
I don't know, Joel. You're so far in debt now, I don't even know if it matters.
I think it's
two steak dinners, and it's two or three lunches.
I'd say
you paid one off because I came over there.
Right.
So you did pay one off, but then you're going to lose this next one. I think it's two right now, and it's going to be three when the S&P's touch 2,400.
Okay, I'm going all in here that the low of the day is in on Philip.
What was the low of the day?
67.51.
No way. That thing traded at 67.51.
Yeah.
What are people thinking? This is Altria Group. Did they, like, you know, that's not going up in smoke. Come on. 67. No, yeah, you're safe on that. I'm definitely not taking that.
Oh,
no, I don't think,
man.
No way in hell it gets back down to 67.51. When you're hitting, okay, here's a nice lesson. Defensive stocks, even when they miss big time, you know, they usually don't go down $3-4. There's just too many people that buy these things for the dividend. So, I you know, when you're hitting something, you know, right off an earnings report, liquidity is always low. You get one or two big sellers coming, they can really knock it down. And maybe that's the opportunity to strike sometimes. But, you know, unless it's a complete, absolute disaster, I can't see how Altria Group goes down $3 or $4.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you look at the standard deviations of the moves there, you're probably out, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 20 standard deviations on the, you know, this is the way this thing moves. I would say just coming back up, I can't really give you a great area of resistance, but if you get anywhere in the 70 handle, yesterday's low was 70.86, a couple other lows around 71, so easier to find the resistance, and I just think you'll see buyers ahead of that pre-market low.
All right, we do have a deal Ace is talking about in the chat. Angie's List, getting bought, ANGI, by IAC. Both stocks getting a big lift here in the pre-market. IAC is trading up 11%. Angie's List is trading up 54% here in the pre-market. Spencer, can you give us the details on this deal?
It would be so $8.50 a share in cash. It looks like the takeout price there.
It's for, all cash, not stock.
No, I think it's a mix of both. I think.
Okay. Well, do you have the ratio?
Let me.
Because Ace is asking why it's trading above the takeout price. Well, that's if it's a stock deal, it's because IAC is trading way up.
Yep. Let me get the ratio. Hold on 1 second for you.
Okay, Spencer's gonna go hunting for that, but. While he hunts for that, I'll just give the quick, you know. So when it's a stock deal, you've got to obviously look at the acquirer because that's what's going to be the price off, and it's going to move off the ratio that Spencer's going to hunt down. But IAC trading up 9 points. So at the 850 price they're talking about, that's based on a closing price of 84.19 for IAC. IAC is trading the 93 handle right now. Okay. So that's why ANGI is trading so much higher is if it's got that stock component to it.
All right. ANGI's List stockholders will have the right to elect to receive either one share of Class A common stock of the new ticker or the new company, right? Or $8.50 per share in cash for each share of Angie's List stock that they own with a cap of up to $130 million.
Okay, it's confusing. So there's going to be one share of the new company that they're going to form. So now you got to look at what do they have, like, you know, how many shares of the new company Angie's going to get versus how many shares of the new company IAC is going to get? Do they have that information?
Maybe
I make you dig deeper.
Yeah, I'm going to dig a little deeper. Hold on.
Okay, keep digging deeper there because we still don't have the actual ratio.
What has got in IAC here in the month of April?
You must think this is like...
No, just before that, Dennis, look at the daily. Look at this thing.
It's been flying. I know. And if you've been calling the top on this thing, you just got murdered this morning. That was another 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, if you own the IAC, I mean, after that kind of run and then getting another $10 added onto it, I do not know what to say. 93.53 is your pre-market high. And I just want to ask the chat here. I can ask the guys on the desk here. Has anyone ever bought anything off Angie's List?
Oh, it's not. It's not a,
what do they sell on Angie's List?
They don't sell, but
it's
you
not
get.
A bond, it's,
have
it's
you ever hired a repairman?
It's not a marketplace. Yeah.
What is it?
No,
I don't even know what it is.
It's a marketplace. It's a marketplace where you can like hire people, like babysitters or you know a plumber. You know.
It's local people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's the difference. So it's not like Monster or LinkedIn where you've got you know your professional network going across the world. This is like local marketing.
Yeah. Well, but it is across the world, though. So it's like Craigslist, but for services, right? So you sell your services.
But I go on Angie's List in Detroit, and I can find a local Detroit plumber.
Right, and there's...
Local Yellow Pages.
Okay.
Yes, Yellow Pages. And they have ratings, and so that you can, like, see, you know, what other people, what prior customers think of this person,
right.
And, you know.
Matty G's brother-in-law advertises on it, so that is the that's the information I have. So
nice.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
It's getting taken out. So,
it's getting
you know,
taken out,
no
right?
Sense knocking the business. Getting taken out. It's going to merge with IAC. They're going to form this fabulous company here together. What does IAC do, Spencer? Can you go and just see exactly, you know,
don't
what
they
got?
Own?
I think
like
got...
Match.com and things like that. Is it a Barry,
what do they own?
Barry Diller's company, IAC, or not? Am I way off base?
What does IAC own?
That's a good question as to what exactly. I know they have a large. Yeah, you know what, Joel, you're right. They have a very large portfolio. They own Match, like the Match portfolio, Match Group. They own,
they're just buying up all these
a bunch of dating sites. They own Vimeo. They own Dictionary.com, Home Advisor. So they're sort of like a catch-all internet media company. They have a pretty diverse portfolio of websites.
The Yellow Pages, basically, is what they're buying then, right?
That's Angie's List. Sounds like the Yellow Pages to me.
Anyways,
54%. Nice premium for Angie's List shareholders there. Congratulations if you own the stock. Windfall here this morning. ANGI obviously closed at $5.89, and boom, it's up here at $9.15. It's not helping those people who bought the stock at $25 back in 2013, but it's helping the people who bought the stock last year.
All right.
And I was not able to find a ratio. The details that I read to you, I think that's all I think that's out there right now.
All right, so they're going to form this company together. And I'll go digging after the show. Maybe we can hunt it down. But there's got to be some type of, you know, what dollar amounts that they're getting of the new company. Like, I think in 40, 10% of the new company, 20%. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. But in any regard here, both stocks trading higher. Jumping over to back to earnings land, because there was a couple that we missed. We missed Aetna Lumber Liquidators. Let's go this one. Double L. Stock's getting hit here in the pre-market. Stock has been running and running and running. Everybody who hated Double L down to $13 is loving it at $24, but not today because stock's getting hit. Spencer, LL earnings.
93-cent loss for Q1 EPS. That does not compare to the estimate, which was a 22-cent loss. Sales of $248.4 million versus $247.6 million.
Joel, what are your thoughts here? Because we have the formaldehyde issue. Stock gets murdered. It's been coming back. Now it's getting hit here again on their earnings report. When's the last time they made money? Like, 91 cents is a significant amount of money to lose. Have they made money since the formaldehyde issue? Do you have the last few quarters of earnings, Spencer?
Yep.
I know the pro tracks that.
We can look. We can look real quick. So
pro gets you all that information.
The last time Lumber Liquidators made money. Oh, got to go back. Oh, Jesus.
Not since formaldehyde, probably.
It looks like the Q4 report 2015. So 2014. So it was February 2015 was the earnings report for the end of 2014.
That was probably right after formaldehyde.
Yep. Q4 2014 was the last
check
time.
Check the monthlies. When the stock was trading up at $80. So they have not made money since the formaldehyde issue. All right, I'm hands off because I like companies that make money.
Pre-market low here is 22.20. That coincides with the low that you had at 22.17. So we're trading just above that. I mean, the only comment that I want to make on this one is who killed this thing? Was it Whitney Tilson? I mean, whatever really happened of that? I know they paid some fines. I don't know if anybody ever died, but I think this is just just the classic of, I mean, it was right here. I remember when this happened in 2015. I mean, he moved the stock. I mean, he destroyed the market cap of this company and made his money, got out, and I don't even think anything really was turned.
Yeah, but formaldehyde destroyed this company. It wasn't Whitney Tilson.
But what, I mean, I think there was extremely low levels of formaldehyde in there. I don't really think it really resulted in anything substantial.
Either way, I don't think we can blame Whitney Tilson for Lumber Liquidators, troubles here. Ones that had the formaldehyde. I don't want formaldehyde on my floors.
You don't even know what's in your floors.
Wood. Wood is in my floors. Okay. I want wood.
All right. Really? You put wood on the bottom of an igloo?
The Canadian joke's funny. The person who is half Canadian.
That's right. You always go back to that one. I don't know. It's 22.10, 22.17 looks like a little support there, but the stock has had a nice run.
Spinner talking about CMI. It's been on a tear. Not only been on a tear, it is on a tear. It is up another $10 here this morning. They have reported earnings, and it is flying. Spencer, do you have the CMI Cummins numbers?
$2.36 was the EPS. $1.87 was the EPS in the same quarter last year. So some good year-over-year growth there. Sales of $4.6 billion. They're also raising their fiscal year 17 sales outlook. It was flat to down 5%. Now it's up 4 to 7%.
Stock's up 10 points here, but one concern is the book looks thick to me. So, I just look at that. It's only traded 7,000 shares so far. I'm wondering if it can open over 160.
Sympathy play worked on this one, Dennis, if you throw cat in there, right?
Yeah, you can. It's not direct, though.
It's not a direct? Okay.
I would say it's direct. I think there are some people who pair deer, cat, and Cummins. I kind of throw them all into the same boat. But,
$10?
They're all kind of their own animals, too.
Opening into a great level here. If you've been waiting to sell at the all-time high that was made in June of 2014 at 161.03, here is your opportunity if you're looking for greener pastures here. I'd wait to see what happens on that opening print, even if it can open over 160, 161. But couple other gap and goes, but that was probably on the caddy earnings, even though Dennis says it, they're not really directly correlated.
Oh, it probably was.
All right. So all-time high, 161.03. Good question from J-Dot here, and he says, can you tell us who gets the money when a company is fined? I guess it would be where, like, when Lumber Liquidators paid their fine, what, I mean.
Regulator, usually.
Regulator. You know, If it's a SEC infraction, if it's a
The regulator. Health. That's what keeps them in business.
Yep.
They live on fines, your regulators.
Okay. I don't know. A little
like,
too
you know,
much.
Your police officers live on parking tickets, traffic tickets.
Yeah, I got a few of those from Michigan State University on my visa bill every month. But
nice.
Anyway, Spoo's unchanged here at 22.87. Just kind of hanging out here. 8:30. We're going to – let's hold off on the Apple until Nick comes in here.
Sure. We'll save Apple for Nick.
Yeah, so let's –
let's talk MasterCard.
Okay.
Earnings, MA, stock trading up a buck in the pre-market. Spencer,
yep.
Do we have MA numbers?
We do. Adjusted EPS for the first quarter at $1.01 versus a 95-cent estimate. Sales of $2.7 billion versus $2.65 billion estimate. So good numbers.
And stock trading up a buck in the pre-market. Let's see what Visa did. I remember Visa reported a week or two ago, did it not, Spencer? Which day was the Visa numbers? Or was it back in March?
Visa reported...
March 20th?
Not March.
No, they reported April 20th.
Oh, April 20th.
Yeah.
April 20th, sorry.
And they beat.
It popped, and then it gave it all back. So, you know, I always like to look at what, you know, the peer did. And it popped, and then it gave it all back. I don't know if this is going to do the same thing or not, but there's a warning out there because Visa numbers were pretty darn good, and they didn't hold the gains. So MasterCard trading up a buck here in the pre-market. I don't know if it holds a gain either.
Nah, well, if you consider 119 and a quarter, that print in the pre-market trading, it's backed off almost $2 from that level. I think there's still a significant level here from the last 3 days of trading, and that's right there at 117.37, two other highs buffeting that. So you hold 117.30, I think you're good to go to the upside here. If not, you could easily see that close at 116.37 and a couple pesky lows at 116 even. So all the way up, almost $2 off that pre-market high, 19 and a quarter. Dennis, how about a cup of coffee that we don't see 119 and a quarter?
No, I already said I think it's giving it back, so I'm on the same side as you. I think this thing goes red today.
Okay.
I don't know why. And I, full disclosure, I own this in my investment portfolio too. A lot of stocks in my investment portfolio when they start to get
Dennis,
counts.
You can't say every stock that beats earnings is in your investment portfolio.
That's some of them that missed too. Well, Pfizer's in there. It missed. I said that this morning. Pfizer and Merck. I said both of those
what
are
are you
in
doing
there.
With your
both of those are red.
What are you doing with your Gilead, man? Are you like
that sucks. I got caught in the value trap in that thing. I'm still in it. I'm in from 80. You can
You're
trade my heat
80.
If you want. $80. I'm in real trouble in that
one.
Are
you sure it's not 70?
No. I bought it at 80. So it's at 80 and a half, I think. Getting paid 3% to wait, but man, ugly purchase. I got caught in the value trap in Gilead. So I'm holding on, though. They got some money. The company's still viable. They need some growth. That's what they need. I don't know if they can ever find it. Maybe they're going to find it someday. But in any regard here, that one was a bad one in my invest portfolio. My invest portfolio has done real well. I mean, the overall market's done really well. I look in there, and out of the 75 stocks I got, I think I'm up on about 65 of them.
But that
one's one of the big red ones.
I think Spencer one day is going to get your portfolio, and Gilead's going to be at like $28, and he's going to be like,
$28. I hope not. I've had a few though. I've taken a few, you know, down significantly there. So there's been some bad ones in there.
Alcoa.
Long term. So I always say, you know, I usually hold, you know, well, it depends. I have different time frames. And speaking of that, we're going to talk about my Apple position here too with Nick. I want to get his thoughts here because I'm thinking about lightening up my Apple position, but I want to ask Nick what he's going to do. Maybe he's got an option play for me or something. But we're going to go grab Nick Shaheen here right now. I'll ask him about my Apple stock.
Are we bringing him in on the fly here?
Yeah, let's bring Nick on the fly.
Yeah, I mean, this is a live interactive show.
Sure.
He's already got a chart of Gilead in there, man. This guy is amazing.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nick Shaheen, create income with option spreads. That would be set by selling spreads and all options, never buying them. Nick, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourselves? I was listening to you guys. It was a pretty good debate you had going on. Quite a collection of tickers this morning, all over the map. You know,
all over the map. Different. Yeah, the earnings, they're all over the place here this morning, Nick. But I got to get your thoughts on Apple. They're going to report here tonight. I've had Apple. Okay, so I've had Apple in my investment portfolio for a long time. I think it's going on 3 or 4 years. But I doubled my position just recently, and I would have been right before the big run-up, just at the end of 2016. Doubled my position. I bought I doubled my position. I bought more stock at 105. And I'm looking out of here, and it's been such an incredible run since I bought. I basically picked, you know, the low almost of that move when it pulled back. And it's up here at 147 here this morning. And I'm thinking about not selling my whole position, but just selling the extra part to get back to my original size because it's been on such a run. I want to get your thoughts, though, here. You know, maybe I should do an option instead, or maybe, you know, I should just flat out sell half my position and get back to my original size.
Well, there are a lot of options. Well, no pun intended there. There are a lot of there are a lot of things you can do. The easy thing is stock replacement. So even if I book my profits and the extra calls I had, I could still buy some cheaper calls. I mean, in this stock, I can buy some cheaper calls and still participate on the upside. That's one way of doing it. So you got your money's in your pocket. Then you
sell this position I want to sell and buy equivalent calls to participate.
It doesn't have to be an equivalent. You can pick whatever call position you want. And if Apple rallies again from here, then you're still long. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to sell calls against that batch. So let's say you want to sell X share, you sell the equivalent number divided by 100 for the calls, you sell their cover calls, so you're not creating any extra risk, and you get to participate upside if you know, up until that point, and then if it rallies past that call you sold, then you're called away from your stock, so you're just basically forced to sell it at that point, but you still participated with more upside.
And you get the premium.
Yep, and also what you can do is when somebody sells a call, sometimes they opt to buy puts, so you're basically protecting your stock for free or for a lot cheaper than you would buying the puts. So you sell the calls, you collect some premium, use that premium to buy some puts a little lower than where you are, so you're still long up until that sold call, and if it falls, then you're protected because when you buy a put, you're guaranteed the right to sell the stock at that put if it falls below it. So if Apple goes to zero and you sold and you bought the 140 put, then you sell it to 140, and the person that sold you that put is on the hook for 140 to zero.
Well, the covered call strategy. So obviously the options aren't open right now, but do you have the closing prices there from when they closed yesterday to try to get a feel for what kind of premium I can get? So let's just say I'm comfortable selling above 150. What can I get for the 150 call right now, you know, on, you know, just the weekly, just to take us through the earnings report?
Oh, for this week? You know,
To take us through the earnings report. I'm just curious what the type of
premium
the
150
there.
Will give you over a dollar. And I'm pretty sure if Apple opens up, it'll be probably $1.50-ish.
Yeah.
Right
and
now,
Apple
right
is
right
trading
now,
up 60 cents
$1.19. But the easier way to do it is to go way out in time and do it much higher. So
let's go at 150. Let's go at like 6 months or something. What can I get?
So November, I'll give you the November. 160 is almost $4.
The 160. So going 14 points higher.
Yeah. If you even want to go higher, this is kind of like creating your own dividend. If you go higher at the 170, you still collect almost $2, $1.73 at the close. So I don't know where it would be this morning. These are November calls, so they're slow movers.
Yeah.
And but you know they
won't
be.
What if I went like 150 on the November? Like I'm going to get close. You know, do I get
$7.50?
$7.50.
Yeah, ish. So you know that means you're long basically to 150 plus $7, because you get to keep that premium when you get called away from your stock. So these are things you can do as long as they're covered calls. I never sell naked calls in stocks, especially going into earnings, and especially not one as hot as Apple and as loved as Apple, because then it's like shorting the stock only at a higher level. So if the stock goes to a million, you're on the hook from that sold position up to a million. You know, I use these as exaggerations, but you see what I mean? Because when you buy something, your maximum risk is the cost of entry. When you short a stock, your maximum loss is unlimited. Therefore, in theory, it's not advisable.
Nick, how did you play it? I know did you do it with a debit spread, a call spread? How did you play it? I know you were happy yesterday. You took some chips off the table. How did you play it going into earnings?
I'm these days I'm just selling puts below value. So if I see something get hammered, you got mentioned a few stocks today here, like I think what was it? You talked about AMD or Nvidia or something like that. What the problem is when something is this hot and something is moving this fast, most investors are left out because as it's rising, it seems like it's overvalued at all at any point in time. I just want to wait for a pullback, and that pullback never comes. So then you're left out. And when they're falling fast, then they're like falling into an abyss, like a falling machete, and you can't touch it. So if you use options, then you can build a buffer. So if a stock is falling, like you mentioned, Altria falling to whatever level. Okay, so if it's falling, I'll do my homework. I'll see if their support level is well below it, 10, 20% from where it's going to open after falling. Then I can sell puts down there, and I know that I have a buffer of 20% more. So I'm doing that with all of these value names that fall. In Apple's case, I just bought calls straight up. I usually you said I never buy them, but I do buy them as lottery tickets. And Apple always works for me when I buy it early, because everybody is late chasing the report, and then whether they sell it before the report or just after, I really don't care because I'm out. So I was long into yesterday in calls.
Which ones?
I can't remember because I closed it. Hold on. It was at the money, and it was for June. I think June 2nd or something like that.
Huh.
But at the money calls. So I didn't need to guess how far it's going to rally. If it's going to rally, I was going to be in the money right away. So I booked those and then reopened another one with a shorter time frame with some of the profits. And then I booked those at the end of the day too. So now I'm flat Apple. And now I'll decide which way I want to play my earnings. And I get to do it with free money because I already collected my lottery ticket winnings. So whether I sit it out or I decide to book to load up with another trade position there, I looked at the open interest for Apple, and the easier path is lower. That doesn't mean anything. It's just how the market is lined up. So the easier path is toward like 143.5. I'm not calling it as a forecast. I'm just telling you what the market is expecting. The way I interpret the open interest right now for Apple. For this
all right, what about this little drop here in AMD? Is that something that's attracting your interest at all?
Yes, it's on my to-do list today. Depends on how violent the drop is going to be, and I'll share with you a chart with some comments on there, because I was working on it. So we shall see how that turns out. And it would be something, you know, AMD is one of those momentum stocks I just mentioned. I mean, on its way up, it was just $3 and change just under 12 months ago. So it being at 12 now seems like a disaster, but it's still, you know, hugely up from where it was 12 months ago. So what the heck happened between 12 months and now that we mispriced it so badly at the lows and at the highs? So somewhere in the middle lies the truth. But this middle is huge. So this is where you got to be using the options. Makes me need to be less exact with my entry points because I can build buffers. So if I sell a put in AMD, it won't be at the money. I can tell you that. It will be way lower than that. And I would want to have them retest, have it survive whatever put position I sell, another drop just like today. I'm not going to leave myself on the hook for a stock that has rallied so far so fast in 12 months.
All right. What about a stock like Adobe, who's just been on a major run here? We have Brad D. asking about that. We can check to see when earnings are. ADBE, give us your thoughts on that.
I will as soon as my platform wakes up. For me, it's one of those too high to chase. I don't know a lot about it. It seems well run. You don't hear ever about them messing up. And yeah, my platform is not pulling it up, but okay. I can tell you it's too high to chase and too hot to short. So if you know the fundamentals, then you trade it accordingly. If you don't and you want to take a stab long, for me, I'm more comfortable selling puts below current levels to build myself a buffer of sorts rather than chase a price target. So chasing a price target requires me to buy calls and put my money at risk right here, right now, or buying the stock, put my money at risk right here, right now. Instead, I'd rather sell the puts or put spreads and then build myself a buffer.
Nick, we're also going to hear from Facebook this week. Give us your thoughts here on the Facebook chart. And, you know, ahead of this earnings report, we've been running here for a while, up from 140 up to 153 now here this morning. And it's just been an incredible pre-earnings run here.
Yeah, Facebook is off the charts, just like most of FANG. And what the open interest, again, like Apple, it suggests lower is the easier path, but that's probably because of this super run that they've had, right? I'll also share the FANG stocks because they are similar in nature. They're so high that you really can't put a price target on there. Facebook in the long run is a winner. It's just picking a good entry spot. Like you tried in Gilead, I heard you say that. that was a wrong entry spot. But just to tell you a little side note on Gilead, looks technically frisky at this point, but it did that several times and it caught me long one time. However, I bought calls and sold puts so I was long for free and the trade went nowhere. But in this case, you got to go with the fundamentals if you believe in it, and then you have to pick an entry point. But if I zoom out on Facebook, really the bigger story is if you look at the weekly chart, it kind of travels up in steps. It goes up to a point, it consolidates, maybe it drops a little bit, and then it reloads. So maybe I don't want to chase it here. I see how they handle the earnings and then post earnings. And then you have to consider the macro, because our market's a little tired. But, you know, this is insanity. The VIX, can I ask you, was that the lowest close ever on the VIX yesterday? I mean, I eyeballed it on my chart.
Lowest close in a lot of years.
I don't think it's in a lot of years. I couldn't find a lower close on my chart.
What did it get down to? Well, and it was under 10 here for the first time since 2007. So it fell under 10 for the first time since 2007. We know what happened in 2007. But, you know, the VIX getting this low here just shows you people just are not afraid.
Yeah, I mean, there's no fear, even though things are, you know, at a, we're a little high. This is the NASDAQ, then and now, I guess you could call that. I don't know if this type of chart shows up on your platform or not, but if you put a chart of the dot-com bubble and where we are right now, oh boy, I mean, we put it behind us in the rearview mirror. We can't even see the dot-com bubble. So loading up long on everything right here seems wrong to me. I'm not saying short anything. I'm just saying if I'm picking entry points, I'm leaving room for error. That's all I'm saying. So Facebook falls under that category. I like the idea of it long term. It's one of the proven winners. Same with Apple, same with Facebook. That's the problem. The companies themselves are not mathematically expensive, those guys, because they're delivering. However, the indices seem, and I emphasize on seem, overextended, but they've seemed overextended for months. So you can't say, okay, so kind of we're stuck. Like these momentum stocks, you know, we're so high so fast that we seem overextended at any point in time, so we stay out. So, and then when finally you decide to come in, whoop, we have a little dip, and then you sell, and then you're that's why entry points are important. Less important if I'm using options, because I can build a buffer, a room for error. For example, Southwest Airlines fell, we sold puts. The next day, the next 2 days, it pops, then I trim half my puts for a nice profit. So I did that with Twitter. Can you believe it? I sold puts at 13. It rallied. I closed them before the earnings because I didn't want that extra risk. But I also sold puts at 10, and those are still running, and I'm not going to close those. I did that with Tesla, believe it or not. So you got to use the options markets because it allows you to build buffer zones from current price.
All right. Go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to ask with the VIX so low here, though, and you're more of a net option seller than you're a buyer. Isn't it difficult? Like, I mean, you know, the premiums obviously have got to be a lot lower than you're used to getting when the VIX has fallen under 10. Isn't it, you know, a difficult game to try to find premium?
Okay, yeah, but I'll tell you what. That is difficult if you're trying to sell an iron condor into the SPY, for example.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to sell puts into Mo on a drop of 10% or whatever it's dropping this morning, it's not difficult. The premium for Mo puts are going to be on fire. So you're going to get the juice. Same with Southwest, same with the AAL. If they're falling, you sell puts into them. Those puts are expensive because it's falling on the morning. So you use the morning madness to pick a point, and the puts will be inflated because of its own, quote, VIX, the implied volatility in that particular ticker, and the underlying, because of the underlying's price move, is juiced. So that's why I don't, people ask me, they look at Facebook, is it time to sell the credit put spread? Not for me. I mean, I'm selling it at a discount at all-time high. I'd rather wait for a pullback. And if it doesn't come, I missed it.
Nick, what about Twitter here? Have they turned the corner and now realize they're a news agency and not a social media company? Gave you all kinds of chances to get in there at the $14 area. What's your outlook for Twitter?
Well, Twitter, the platform itself, I love. The company itself, I don't like, because they are proven, they've proven to us several times over that they can mess up a good thing at any point in time and without notice. So I'm not chasing the price. I told you how I traded it. When it fell to whatever it fell last time, I sold puts in it at 13 and then at 10. And I collected thousands. Because I was gutsy enough, I think I collected a dollar for the $13, $1.20 or something like that. So I figured, hey, everybody's chasing that headline. I'm going to sell puts against that, not against the stock. I was selling puts against people's hopium and the buyout headline. The cheaper it gets, the better. So I'll wait for the next dip and I'll do it again. Until now, I'm not chasing it.
All right, Nick, strategy here for me to execute off the open. I just don't think we're going to stay at this area here. We're trading at 2387. We've had three out of the last four lows right there at 2377, 78. That's your major support. So if we take that out, I think we see a lot of downside. On the other hand, good numbers out of Apple, you know, good reports continuing to come. Another Trump tweet or something, you bust above 2394.75. Greener pastures ahead. How to take advantage of this quiet consolidation here in the market?
Well, you've seen my ranges for this week, for the that we set last week. We are trading the range, and I just posted a chart with that range. I can tell you one thing. The dips are being bought, and without a new headline, the dips will be bought. I can see it falling to 2365, but I wouldn't call it a start of a short there. I would short now for that dip to come if I wanted to short it. Otherwise, I'd buy the dips. Until that changes, that's how I'm playing it.
All right. We've been on the line with Nick Shaheen. He's the author of Create Income with Option Spreads, finding the hot stocks to trade and ones to stay away from as well. Thanks a lot, Nick. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Can't wait.
All right, Spinner 213, British Petroleum. I think he's asked about this stock before here. Not sure if we have any news out on the issue. Let's take a look at British Petroleum. A nice pop up over $35. Maybe they did have some earnings. 35.03 is your pre-market high. Looking at your daily chart, man, had a high just over 35, looks like 35.40. That's going to be key to get through that. Falling oil prices or flat oil prices probably really aren't helping you a whole lot on that position.
Kind of a sloppy head and shoulders on the chart there too. Usually these ADRs do have sloppy charts there because they're obviously just tracking the action from Europe. But, you know, I think as long as this thing's worth below 35, I think the bears are still in charge. If we could get up above 35, close above there, you know, maybe then we could challenge that high, which is the top of the head that I'm looking on April the 12th at 35.69. But oil itself, you know, has been in a little bit of struggles here lately. Kind of looks like it's hanging on a cliff there too. So I don't know. It's hard to get on the BP bandwagon.
All right, and Ace thinks Shutterfly looks overpriced here, and we've talked about that stock in the past. Has a nice double top to lean on here, so if you're short in Shutterfly here, just under $53, filled a gap, boy, from January. It took a long time to do that. A lot of times after a gap fill, you do see a reversal. We'll see if that happens in Shutterfly, double top at 52.56 and 52.61.
Yeah, you know what, stock filled the gap. It's got all kinds of overhead supply in here. I think you're late to the party if you're coming here long. So I'm kind of on the same side as Ace here. I think I'd rather be on the short side than the long side of $52 on Shutterfly.
All right, 8:54. We haven't done any imbalances or ratings, Dennis.
All right, well, there isn't a lot of ratings, so I can just give you the one that I do see of significance. First Solar catching an upgrade from UBS here this morning, just to neutral, though, with a price target of $30. That's right where the stock is trading right now, $29.99. So not that much to get excited about here, but it was one of note there. If you want to do an FSLR, quick technical, Joel, then I'll jump in and balance.
Yeah, $30 looks like a nice level here. Boom, your two-day high. Comes in at 30.50. We haven't cleared that yet. 30, a psychological number. Maybe just get above that and hold. Maybe you can check out another little sprint to 32. And I just want to check on another solar stock that we flat out had a buy recommendation on in this show. And CSIQ really hasn't moved. It was at the 1320, 1330 area. Did get a little bump over 14, but has come back trying to find support at 13. Strategy for Tesla, asked JTELE, and boy, I wish we would have had
it's just
Nick on.
Such a monster.
What do you do on this one, Dennis?
I'm doing the same thing I've been doing for the last 100 points, just ignoring it. I wish I would have been long. I wish I, you know, but I was, you know, I'm glad I wasn't short because I haven't been bullish this. I've been bearish the stock, and I've been wrong. And maybe I was looking at it the wrong way, you know, trying to value it as a car company, and it's not just a car company. You know, it's got a lot of other things too. You know, you think about the batteries, you think about the solar component of it now. You know, you think about it as, you know, the future way of, you know, they're going to change the whole world, maybe. That's how the market's pricing it. I'm still not going to go in it because it doesn't fit my description of a value stock. I'm more of a value investor, so I'm hands off. I think I'm done giving commentary on Tesla here because I've been wrong on this one. I don't think I've been more wrong on anything before than Tesla.
Jake, I can tell you what my strategy was yesterday, and I wrote a note on it, and I did not follow through. I said, I have to buy this thing going through 315. Because you had two tops at 14.5, 14.80. I said, I'm going to ride this momentum bandwagon. And I flinched. It opened up at 14.88, and it was at 316.5 in a heartbeat. And I'm like, I'm chasing now. And then lo and behold, it goes up to 27.25. I guess the only thing, I know earnings are coming up on the stock. When the stocks get into a stratosphere like this, I really don't pay as much attention to, like, the all-time high or, you know, the low for the day. But what I pay attention to is that closing price. And the all-time closing high price is $322.83. It's been moving up. So, you know, see how the action, you know, dictates around that. We are trading lower in the pre-market, so it should act as a little bit of resistance. But that's just kind of how I like to track. If I was long this thing going into earnings, man, sell calls or buy, you know, if you don't want to lose your stock at any price, maybe buy some puts underneath. But
so much premium though to buy puts. It's tough.
Sell,
I mean, there's going to be
calls,
what do you have
puts.
The options? Bring up the options. What is like the 325? Because obviously the closed right now, but Friday from yesterday's close, what was like the 325 Strava going for here? And when is the earnings date? When is the actual earnings date of Tesla? Spencer, do you have the actual date?
I gotcha. Tesla earnings is May. It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow
after the bell. Tomorrow.
Okay. So what is the 325 Strava going for? It's going to be astronomical.
$16. This is called 10, and it's called $18.
$18. So there you are. So you're talking, they're expecting at least an 18-point move. That almost seems light to me considering how crazy the stock has been running, but I don't know what to say. If I was long this thing going into earnings, I'd probably be booking some just because it's had such a run ahead of the earnings report. But, you know, that being said, we saw Amazon pop off its. We saw Google's pop off its earnings report after extended runs. You know, Amazon kind of ran in its report and it ran up even more. So, but this has been a pretty impressive move here for Tesla. Again, don't follow anything I say on Tesla, though, because I've been wrong on this stock for a long time. Glad I don't trade it.
Let's see here. FLAC UK, is there any value in looking at the divergence between the SPX and the ATES? SPX?
No value in looking at that anymore. I mean, it's held in by the ARBs. There used to be, and, you know, I used to play the arbitrage between the actual stocks and the ES, you know, years ago. High frequency traders are all over that. They keep that, you know, in line very well. So, I mean, if you're talking divergence, there's not much of a divergence there. The only reason there'll be a divergence is the contract rolls. So obviously changes every time the ES, you know, and we would have just rolled back at the end of March. So if you're talking about, you know, just the roll from a month ago, that's when you're going to see that divergence in the price from SPX and ES.
All right, Spencer, 1 hour nonstop of stocks and more stocks here. You want to wrap things up and preview Wednesday?
Yeah, we got a really, really good one tomorrow, folks. So, obviously, Apple reporting earnings. We're going to have on tomorrow's show the man himself, Gene Munster, formerly of Piper Jaffray, now of Loop Ventures, maybe the best Apple analyst out there. And Gene will be on the show tomorrow to kind of break down what Apple is saying about how their quarter went and what that means for the future of the company. So looking forward to having Gene Munster on the show tomorrow. We are just about 1 week away from the Benzinga FinTech Awards. It's next Thursday, the 11th. If you're going to be in the New York City area and you're thinking about want to stop on by, meet some people at Benzinga, meet some of the biggest players in FinTech. Kevin O'Leary will be there from Shark Tank. The heads of some of the major brokerages will be there. A lot of people in the finance and tech scene will be there. You can go to BenzingaFinTechAwards.com for your ticket information, and you can also reach out to me by emailing premarket@benzinga.com if you want to maybe get a discount code. I can get you the hookup there. Also, please remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investment advice. That's it for us right now. Have a good rest of your Tuesday. We'll be with you folks tomorrow morning with Gene Munster. Have a good rest of your day.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.